attitude. We are going to energise the country.
Stop Brexit.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Seamus, I'm not sure this is a great idea either.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. I'm your host, Will. And in the 30th episode of the Debated Podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by the Labour Party's parliamentary candidate for Oxford West and Abingdon, Rosie Sowerbot. Welcome to the podcast, Rosie.
Thank you, Will. Hello, everyone.
So, to begin with, I'd like to ask, because the seat has been held by both the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats, and recently hasn't been held by the Labour Party, how confident are you of taking the seat?
I think we've got a good chance because we've had Lib Dems and Tories for 9 years now, and I think people across this country, in Oxford West and Abingdon particularly, are very fed up of austerity and of just the visible decline in people's quality of life that they've seen over those past 9 years. We've had children's centres closing across the constituency, we've had food banks opening, people are waiting longer to see doctors, and we've got this real manifesto of hope that Labour has released just yesterday. And when I was talking to people on the doorstep yesterday, loads of people were really excited about the National Care Service. People are excited about investment in the NHS. And I think at this election, we've got a clear choice with the Labour Party. You have the sort of hopeful manifesto that we need to sort of save the planet, invest in public services, build a more equal and fair society where people have more opportunities. And then the Lib Dems and the Tories, which are more of the same for Oxford West and Abingdon, where they've been dominating in recent years, and for the rest of the country where they've let us down.
How do you think the reaction to Labour's position on Brexit and going back to the European Union, renegotiating a deal, then putting it to the people, has how do you think that's come across to the people of Oxford West and Abingdon? Are they generally in favour of something like that?
Yeah, so what I've found is a lot of people, either they voted Remain, but they're quite concerned about the quite sort of undemocratic and unrealistic way in which the Lib Dems are saying, you know, elect a Lib Dem majority government, not going to happen, and we'll just cancel Brexit and ignore the fact that, you know, a lot of people did vote for that, and there's clearly a kind of question there that needs to be answered. And the Tories, who are like, we're going to pursue a really hard Brexit that's going to risk workers' rights, environmental protections, it's going to decrease quality of life for people in this country and make us sort of really dependent on a trade deal with the US that will potentially see our NHS sold off. So I think the sort of the kind of option that Labour is offering is we'll have it all sorted within 6 months and it will be done democratically. So there'll be the option to remain, which is what I'll campaign for. I campaigned to remain in 2016 because I thought it was really important for women's rights and workers' rights and the environment that we did that. And I spoke to older friends in the party who also talked about how important it is for peace in Europe, having the European Union. And then we'll also have a sort of practical, good leave option that will still protect workers' rights and ensure that we're not suffering and we don't have kind of the widespread destruction that will come about if Boris Johnson manages to get his Brexit deal through that will just work for the elite.
Now, I'd just like to talk about some particular constituency matters. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the Oxford to Cambridge Expressway?
Yeah, I think the Oxford-Cambridge Expressway is the wrong direction to be moving in, because what we want to be doing is investing in better public transport support for people, electrification of rail, green options for people to transport around, and also improving air quality, not getting sort of more cars on the road and more congestion and stuff like that. So we're opposed to the Oxford-Cambridge Expressway in Oxford Labour.
How do you feel about the Oxfordshire growth deal?
The Oxfordshire growth deal. Could you just clarify for me what you mean by that?
I mean the let me just get on my nose. you've caught me out here. It's the the growth board secured 250 million of government investment for new homes and infrastructure across Oxfordshire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Is this something that's been? I think has this been announced today? I've just seen.
I think it might have been.
I've just seen in today's 22nd of the 11th budget. So that is something I have not heard about yet.
Okay.
And so I don't have a comment on it.
Okay, that's fair enough.
If there's new, seeing it saying that new homes and infrastructure are going to be built, and that's great because we've got a massive like homelessness crisis in Oxford with loads of people who can't afford housing. But it's important that if new homes are being built, they're genuinely affordable homes, and that includes like social and council housing, like Labour's promised to do when we're elected.
Okay, right. What do you think the reaction to the recent television debate has been? Do you think that there has been a positive reaction to Jeremy Corbyn's performance on that?
Yeah, well, I was really pleased to see that the majority of undecided voters who were watching the debate were impressed with the Labour position that was put forward by Jeremy in the debate. And I think, yeah, it did sort of really show the contrast that we've got. We've got Boris, who's lied to people again and again, and who's really just working for sort of the very top of society. And then we've got Jeremy, who is presenting a sort of genuine manifesto of hope.
How much do you think the, because of course the Conservatives are suggesting that Labour have not costed their manifesto and things like that, how much do you think that this may have an effect on swing voters, this idea that Labour's plan may be revolutionary, may be good, all these sorts of things, but it may cost too much? How do you think that will play?
Yeah. I think it's important to note that we're actually the only party who will be releasing, well, who have now released a fully costed manifesto. And we were also the only party who did that in 2017. So the sort of Tories are like, oh, it's just, you know, reckless spending. And they say things like with the broadband policy, they're like, oh, it's too expensive. But when you look at it, it's actually going to cost about 20 billion, but bring in 59 billion. So that's... it's just a completely short-term way of looking at it, the way the Tories look at spending. And they're also going into this election promising lots of spending. But the difference is that Labour spending plans a long-term investment that will create new infrastructure and new jobs and have a return and kind of lead to the lead to a better functioning economy that's working for the many, whereas the Tories are just doing really short-term kind of cash injections. So that's a kind of actually more reckless form of spending. But I think because because the Tories sort of liked this attack line of like, you know, Labour spends too much, or kind of saying like that, yeah, essentially that you can't invest in public services. The only option is austerity, which we know from what economists have said and from the evidence of the last 9 years just isn't true. That isn't good for the economy. And so a lot of the media sort of lets them get away with that, when in reality, Labour's going into the election with a stronger investment plan and a fully costed manifesto, which the Tories and the Lib Dems do not have.
The Brexit Party have today been announcing not quite a manifesto, but their agenda. How do you think, if they are able to gain any seats, how do you think that the Brexit Party would change the dynamic of the House of Commons if any of them were elected?
I really hope that they won't gain any seats. But if they do, I mean... the problem is that the Tories have in many ways become the Brexit Party. They've become more and more hard right over the last kind of couple of years. And sort of what Boris is saying and what Nigel Farage is saying is in many ways indistinguishable. And kind of both parties are using real dog whistle tactics to stir up division. I mean, Boris has said a lot of very kind of racist things that are just stirring up hatred towards like vulnerable groups in society in a really unacceptable way. And so in a way, you know, Brexit MPs aren't that different from the sort of Tory MPs who haven't sort of already lost the whip for those who have gone along with the kind of lurch to the right of the party. I think it's two very similar parties now, and that's quite scary. And that's why it is really important that we get that Labour majority, because we've got this choice between you know, a Labour government for the next 5 years, people will see a really radical improvement in their quality of life, and in we'll kind of tackle the climate crisis now because we are running out of time to do that. And then the Tories will just, yeah, ensure that most people are worse off, have fewer rights and protections. And yeah, I really hope Labour win, because I think the Tories are becoming more and more like Brexit and UKIP. And yeah, I don't want that politics of hatred to rule.
Now, you mentioned the environmental impact, and one of the things that is mentioned in Labour's manifesto regarding money put into climate and environmental impacts is forecasting what the cost of not acting would be, which would be factored into every fiscal decision. How important do you think it is to ensure that the cost of not acting is as well known and as promoted as the cost of acting would be?
So important, yeah. And I think that kind of links to what I was saying earlier about this very sort of short-term thinking in the way the Tories are kind of looking at investment and spending money versus the way Labour's looking at it, which is for like what is the cost in the future if we don't act now. So kind of like with quite similarly to kind of investing in climate, investing in tackling like child poverty and ensuring people like have enough to eat when they're young and they're going to school is really important for their future attainment and for social mobility and for their kind of future potential. And that's kind of another way that the Tories have that really short-term thinking that isn't taking into account the long-term human cost and also the kind of economic cost of people not achieving their full potential. And it's the same with the environment. You know, if we don't act now, we just get more flooding, more food shortages, more health problems from bad air quality. And it, yeah, it's so important that it's not just kind of the kind of gross money figures, but also those slightly more complicated to calculate, but still calculable figures about environmental costs that we're taking into account. I'm really glad to see that the Labour manifesto is doing that.
Now, you mentioned the flooding which has recently hit Yorkshire and the Midlands. Now, some people have criticised the Environment Agency for perhaps not acting as promptly as they should. How do you think that a Labour government would they be able to work better with the Environment Agency to ensure that flood defences protect not just humans but also local fauna and local wildlife, and ensure that we don't see the same sort of flooding that we have seen recently again? How do you think they would tackle that?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we do like work with the Environment Agency and with the sort of very best science that is available to ensure that we are protecting people's kind of homes and livelihoods, and also protecting the natural environment and the ecosystem. And yeah, Labour's promised extra funding in order to improve the standard of flood defences, which have been sort of neglected under the Conservatives for a number of years, particularly as you mentioned in Yorkshire and Northwest England and the East Midlands. And I think, yeah, that's just, yeah, really important to both kind of people and the environment around them.
Just going back to the manifesto, in the manifesto, Labour promised that they will halve food bank usage within a year and remove the need for them altogether in 3 years. How much of an impact do you think that would have on Oxford West and Abingdon, and how achievable do you think it is?
So it would have a massive impact, and it's so achievable. And food poverty is one of the reasons why I decided to stand in this election, because I'm just so angry about it. Like, I used to live in Bath before I moved to Oxford, and yeah, when the Tories came to government, we had no food banks in Bath, and then within a few years there were three, because there was just that demand that had been created by universal credit and also by the benefit cap, and just the kind of complete lack of a social security net. Since I've moved to Oxford, I've volunteered at the Oxford Community Emergency Food Bank, and I've also done research at the Social Policy Department looking at the association between universal credit and food poverty, And it's absolutely unacceptable. You've got people waiting more than 8 weeks in order to get any money. And that's just, most people don't have the kind of savings to tide them over for that time. And so you get people in really desperate situations. And yeah, when I've been volunteering in food banks, I've spoken to people who are like, they've just lost their job, or they've become ill, or their partner's become ill, or there's been this sort of family crisis, and it's the sort of event that could happen to anyone, and they're sort of suddenly plunged into a kind of quite desperate situation where they feel really anxious, and the kind of mental health problems that are created when people can't serve their basic needs and those of their family as well. It makes it much harder for them to then kind of break out of that situation. It's not acceptable. And yeah, I met Hungry Children in Oxford, and there's a number of food banks now. Got them in Kidlington, in Abingdon, in Oxford West and Abingdon, and there's just no need. The Labour policy will it's been calculated that if you just reversed all the benefit changes that have been made under the Tories, you would halve food bank use in a year, and it's just morally unacceptable that they're continuing. We had Preeti Patel in a food bank the other day saying, you know, you can't blame the government for poverty.
Yeah.
Of course you can. You've had 9 years. It's got so much worse. In areas that have had universal credit rolled out, it's increased by 52% the number of people using food banks. I really hope we get a Labour government, because it'll just only keep increasing. And the work that food banks do is amazing, and the people who volunteer in them are wonderful, and the people who donate to them are as well. They shouldn't be necessary, and people shouldn't be relying on charity for that basic need. It is very upsetting for people, and people should have the means to kind of choose their own food be able to provide for themselves and know that there's that safety net if they do fall into a crisis.
Now, you mentioned moving from Bath to Oxford. How much of an influence do you think that, because obviously you're a student at the University of Oxford. How much do you think of an influence the university has on the way in which constituencies in Oxford go?
So the university, it's kind of spread out throughout Oxford, and there's some colleges in Oxford East and some colleges in Oxford West and Abingdon. And so on December 12th, most Oxford students, unless they're kind of staying for study or are helping with interviews, will have gone back to their home constituencies. They can still get postal votes to vote in Oxford if they want to. And most Oxford Brookes students will still be around. So I think if lots of young people turn out to vote, it does have the real possibility to increase the vote for Labour, because young people are much more likely to kind of have that long-term thinking about the investment we need for the planet and for our public services. And so I hope lots of young people will vote, we're sort of really driving people registering at the moment.
Now, of course, throughout this podcast you've said, as you would as the Labour Party candidate, that you want Labour to win the general election. The polling is not quite in Labour's favour at the moment. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think we saw this to a certain extent in 2017 as well, kind of before the campaign started. And we did massively increase the Labour standing in the polls as the campaign wore on. So I really hope that will happen again. I don't fully understand it, because I think we do have a sort of offer of what the country really needs as opposed to the kind of Conservatives' offer, which is they're backed massively by billionaires. They have much, much more funding and much more kind of media support than we do. So I guess that can in some ways explain how they're able to kind of push their agenda much more forcefully. I do hope those polls will shift. And in 2017, they did. So hopefully they can this time as well. And I think now the manifesto's out as well. I think, like when I was talking to voters yesterday about that, there were a lot of people who were really impressed with it. And so, yeah, I hope that as we talk to people more and more about those policies, they will sort of realise it is possible. And as we explained, no, this is fully costed. You don't need to, like, believe the Tories when they are sort of, yeah, lying about it in that way. Yeah, I hope will increase.
Now, one of the things that has perhaps not dominated, but has been part of the conversation, has been this sense that both leaders are perhaps not as favourable to the public, or that they're quite divisive figures. How much do you think this plays into individual constituency battles, whether people dislike a particular leader or like a particular leader? How much influence do you think the leaders do have on a constituency to constituency basis?
It's an interesting question. I think, yeah, because people do often bring up the leaders on the doorstep. And while it's kind of the names of the individual party candidates on the ballot, they are kind of hoping to form a government and have the party leader as prime minister. I think it's a mixture. Like, I think people are quite sort of aware of Boris Johnson's kind of track record of lying and the way he's behaved as prime minister so far. So I imagine that that will have an effect. And also, I mean, I was at hustings a couple of days ago, and the Tory candidate for Oxford West and Abingdon started trying to defend the kind of Twitter name change and sort of the kind of lies being perpetuated in that way by the central party, and where they were trying to present themselves as this sort of independent fact-checking source. And I think when local party candidates are put in a position where they're having to kind of defend the indefensible things that the leader or the central party have done like that, I sort of saw the reaction of the sick formers at the school we were at to that, and they were just like, really? And so I think when candidates are trying to defend that sort of indefensible behaviour from their party leader or the central party, it does affect their credibility.
How much do you think there has been a sense that perhaps the Liberal Democrats may pose as an attractive offer to Labour voters who feel a bit disaffected with the party? Do you think that there is much of a shift there, or do you think that these voters who have perhaps flirted with the Liberal Democrats previously may be coming back to the Labour Party when polling day comes round?
Yeah, I think what we have to remember is that, you know, Jo Swinson served in the Tory Lib Dem coalition. She was very kind of faithful to the whip during that time. And her kind of voting record is as pro-austerity as that of Boris Johnson. So, and, you know, the Lib Dems did go into coalition with them before when Ed Davey was on TV, I think it was yesterday, he was suggesting they'd sort of work with a Tory minority government. I think, yeah, the kind of the Lib Dems are, I think, closer to the Tories than to Labour. And they are, I think a lot of people are sort of drawn, a lot of people who want to support Remain are drawn to their sort of stop Brexit policy. But it is misleading, because they won't form a majority government. So they'd have to be working with either the Tories or Labour if that was kind of to achieve that, essentially. So it's a kind of misleading promise. And then even if they were to sort of form a majority in that sort of scenario, it would still be quite undemocratic to just cancel Brexit and not actually answer the question. I think, you know, there continue to be people talking about Brexit until we've sort of said, well, here's a Leave deal that's workable, and that and here's the option to remain. What do you think now? And kind of have that definitive answer based on, you know, a known remain option and a leave deal that people know all the facts about. I don't think the Brexit question will be settled. So I think that's with the Lib Dems. It's sort of, they are essentially a party led by a pro-austerity politician, a party who have sort of suggested that they would work with the Tories again and have done so in the past. And their sort of central, I mean, all the kind of, yeah, Lib Dem posters are sort of like, stop Brexit, vote Lib Dem. Their central promise is misleading and not something that can be achieved in the way they're suggesting they would.
Do you think it was the right thing or the wrong thing to not include Jo Swinson in the most recent TV debate?
I think it was the right thing to do because essentially it was a debate between the sort of two candidates to be the next Prime Minister, which are Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson. And, you know, if you'd included like Jo Swinson, there's also the question of whether to include the SNP and there will be a debate with all of the sort of smaller parties as well. But I think it is really important that people have that option to see, you know, Boris Johnson with his kind of track record of lying and voting for just working for the interests of the elite versus Jeremy Corbyn with his kind of radical manifesto for the many, and to see that, you know, this person can be our Prime Minister or this person can be our Prime Minister. What is it that we want? But I think it is also good that there'll be the opportunity to have a debate with all the party leaders and, yeah, all the smaller parties too.
Well, we're coming up to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for being on, Rose. It's been a delight to have you on.
It's been great talking to you as well.
I'd like to just ask you one final question. We've got Christmas coming up, and of course, I imagine you're looking forward to the possibility of Labour winning the general election.
Yeah.
But apart from that as a Christmas present, what other Christmas present would you most like to receive?
Yeah, I mean, a Labour government, that is the thing that will most improve my quality of life. That's all I really want for Christmas. I really want a dog. I've really wanted a dog for a number of years. And that's kind of another thing linked to wanting a Labour government. Because, I mean, there's 1,001 incredibly, incredibly important reasons why we need a Labour government. But also mean that tenants can have pets. That's sort of a little small policy. And so, a dog would be my top thing for Christmas after a Labour government. And if we get a Labour government, hopefully I can have a dog as well.
Is there any particular type of dog that you'd like?
So I think for my first dog, I want like a cockapoo. And then once I'm kind of used to having a dog, my eventual kind of favourite breed is like the Old English sheepdog, because they're just massive and amazing. But I think I need to kind of get used to managing a slightly smaller dog first.
Well, I think that sounds like an excellent plan.
How about you, Will? What do you want for Christmas?
I mean, obviously, like you said, I would like to see the election of a Labour government. But aside from that, I genuinely don't know at the moment, to be honest. I've not really thought about it. I've honestly not thought about it too much. Hopefully, Labour government, and then see what else, you know, can come from that.
Get a Labour government, I'll be happy with just Fox.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast, Rose. It's been great to have you on. And you're more than welcome to come on again any time you like.
Thank you very much.